The workshop title is Weather Among August. Weather, how to weather the storms. And restate, okay, how to weather the storms. Speaking number one. I believe Paul is speaking first. We have Paul.
My name is Paul, and I'm an addict. I could probably share right from over there, and you could probably hear me no problem without the mic. I'm going to try to get comfortable and relax and just try to enjoy this. Anytime I get an opportunity to share, I feel like it's an opportunity to check into Narcotics Anonymous, and it allows me to let myself know how good I'm doing or not, you know. I had a friend of mine, some of you know him, Tom Kay, asked me, he says, so what workshop are you doing? And he says, I can't believe you're not doing in, dealing with grief, you know, because usually that's the topic they end up putting me in. And I don't know, somehow I became that guy, you know, in Narcotics Anonymous, you know. I feel like I'm very seasoned. I've been through a lot, weathered a lot of storms as a little kid, you know, grew up in the projects. Had a blonde afro, I was the only white kid in the neighborhood. And, I come from the armpit of the world, New Bedford, Massachusetts. If you look at Massachusetts, you look at the armpit, that's where I'm from. The disease of addiction was really scary. I don't know, like the way I dealt with things back then is I used, you know, I started using at a very early age. And I continued to use, and I continued to use. I always ended up doing things that I said I wouldn't do, you know, and I'd always cross out that imaginary line. I know when I first found out about Narcotics Anonymous, I was sitting in a shooting gallery, and this guy, Ego, at the end of his addiction, we called him Seagull, but in the beginning, we used to call him Ego. He was from the penitentiary, and he had a meeting list pinned to the wall, and I was curious, you know, because it said narcotics on it, you know, and I was really curious, and he told me a little bit about Narcotics Anonymous and what some people were doing or trying to do back then, and the AIDS virus was running crazy, like people were dropping like flies back then, and really scary times to me. You know, I lost my grandfather to suicide. He killed himself. He was one of us down in the South End. He killed himself. My grandmother died giving birth to my father, my real father. And I had an uncle died from the AIDS virus. My uncle Mario. I had another uncle that died in the service, you know, so there was a lot of that stuff, and I would just like, I would take to the neighborhood, you know, I always like went to the corner, you know, my mom, who was Miss New Bedford when she was 16, really beautiful lady, if I ever showed you a picture of her, you know, the guys I heard back in the day used to fight over her, and my dad scooped her up, you know, she ended up having mental illness for decades. She went to Taunton, Mass. Back then, the way they treated mental illness was through shock treatment. And it seemed like she got worse and worse and worse. And I was very embarrassed of my mother. You know, I need to say, right, the speaker gave me some things to focus on today, you know, because I really believe, like you know, we identify with people's strengths, you know, but we connect with their weaknesses. And she talked about a lot of things, like she talked about, like, not, you know, not suffering in silence, you know, recovering out loud. And how I've been able to, like, finally get clean and stay clean was, like, take some suggestions and go to meetings and share, like, my life depended on it, you know. There was a lot of stuff as a little kid, you know, and the way I dealt with that stuff is I just put in more stuff, you know. So she gave me some things to really think about, you know. I want God to work through me. I want him to be here. I want him to maybe touch someone, you know. I know there's a newcomer here, you know, where is he, Joey the Kid, he's around here somewhere, you know, and I think that's so cool, man, so cool. Like, I got really fired up when I went to conventions, you know, and hopefully, you know, he'll leave here a transformed person, you know, and he'll be a changed person. But, like, the first time I did this workshop at the East Coast Convention, it was 5 months after I buried my two kids. It was in 2010. It was in Fort Myers, and it was standing room only. It was standing room only. They asked me to share. It was 5 months. Everybody in that room was crying. And there was a lot of tough nuts to crack in there, and they were cracking. Everybody, the bikers were crying. Everybody was crying. You know, there wasn't a dry tear in the room. Hopefully, I'm not going to do that tonight, you know. I got an opportunity to do another workshop there. I think it was 6 years later, and it was on grief, you know. And I was in a different place, you know. I was in a place where I was not struggling with wanting to stay clean, but I was struggling with acting and behaving like I was clean. You know what I mean? And I remember sharing that, you know, because all I know how to do was use, man. I have 30 years experience of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't have 30 years clean. I just celebrated 20 years in the pandemic on Zoom, you know. Some of you know Dutch, and I dedicated that to Dutch, and the screen went blank, and everybody else celebrated without me, and you know what? It was okay. It was okay, because I'm a grateful addict, you know? I'm really grateful. I didn't know the man very long, but I remember the first time I met him was at the World Convention. Again, that wasn't too long after I lost my kids. And there's a reason why I'm talking about him. Like, I didn't come up here thinking I was gonna talk about him. I'm not trying to name drop, or I'm not looking to join the big boy club or anything like that, but there's a reason why I'm talking about him. You know, I get to spend some time with his wife. His wife is always pouring on me, always loving on me. Their words to me, and they welcomed me right in the house. You know, they had a big-ass pool party, and his words to me were, you were going to help a lot of people. And, you know, I have a hard time hearing that, but usually I'm the first guy that will tell somebody else that, especially if they're struggling, you know. There's something comforting about knowing that whatever you're going through, that you're going to be able to use that for a purpose. You're going to use that to save somebody. You're going to use that to save a suffering addict, you know? I remember nine years clean, I had my twins, right? Josh, Michael, and Christian Gabriel, you know? And I had them, and everybody was carrying them. Everybody was holding them. You know, they were NA babies, you know what I mean? And then at 10 years clean, they were no longer there, you know? I don't know. Like, I don't know if anybody can get this, but there was like this grace and peace about me. Like, I was the guy always using. You know what I mean? I was the guy always using. The thought of using never came. It still today has never came. Like I can't tie. I don't even remember the last time I wanted to use. I know I wanted to use in the beginning a lot, and I relapsed a lot, you know? I remember going to meetings. I remember speaking, you know, everywhere, right? I remember writing the steps. I remember sharing my sponsor. I remember picking up my medallion and bringing it to the gravesite, you know? And then I remember looking for a solution, you know? And of course, like for me, you know, I always thought I was going to be this vehicle somehow, or this tool for others to use in Narcotics Anonymous, to be that poster boy for no matter what. Because, right, if I can stay clean, anybody can stay clean. You know, and then I found myself out in the community being a water safety advocate, you know, doing drowning prevention. And I didn't come up with that stuff myself. There's no way I came up with that stuff myself. You know, they found my two boys face down in the backyard swimming pool. It was by far the worst day of my life, you know. I was actually on my way to my home group, and I was going to go speak on my favorite step, which is the 11th step, and I was going to go there, and I was going to drop it like it was hot, and you know, and I remember I was getting dressed, I was taking a shower, and I got that call, you know, and I remember I fell to my knees, and my oldest son, which the twins were born on his birthday, all three of them have the same birthday, right, I remember him picking me up. You know, one arm picking me up and bringing me into my, I had a Mustang back then, and I remember him driving. He was doing about 100 miles an hour, and I said, Jesse, slow down. He says, Dad, I'm not stopping. I said, you know, they took one twin to one hospital, one twin to another hospital. I said, I don't know which way to go. I don't know. He says, Dad, we're just going to the closest hospital. It was like he was doing all the thinking for me, you know. I remember getting to the hospital, and I've worked a lot. I'm a step working guy, man. Anybody that knows me, I'm a step working guy, and I ain't never felt that kind of powerlessness in my whole life. I saw like a dozen professionals working on my little guy, and I was so powerless. I hit my knees and I prayed and I prayed, and my son comes sliding down the hallway praying with me. And as soon as he did that, my son passed. And I remember my son getting up and smashing all the windows in the hospital. And I remember two officers coming at me, and I put myself in the middle. You know, this is how I was going to deal with this storm. Like, you're going to have to take me out. This isn't going down, you know what I mean? I didn't want to use, but I wanted to hurt people, you know, or hurt myself, you know? And I remember this beautiful detective come out of nowhere, the corner of God's grace again, I believe. She says, I can't even imagine. I got twins at home. Come to find out, she was their supervisor, you know? I can tell you, I never even received one bill for any of those windows in the hospital, you know. That was mercy, you know. It was grace. You know, I've been able to walk gracefully in Narcotics Anonymous, although I have shown my backside. I've taken some spiritual hits around here. I know what it's like to, you know, get tasered and be dragged back to the very same jail that I carry commitments into, you know, on the one-year anniversary. I didn't use, I didn't get high, you know. I remember the officer saying, man, you had a look in your eye like you were under the influence of something. And I told him that was rage, you know. I remember being tasered, and they brought me into the jail, and they put me in the pod, and I had blood from my head down to my toes, and I had a chip on my shoulder, you know. I had that mean mug on, you know, I was ready to face fight anybody, you know what I'm saying? And they started talking to me, man. They started saying things like, man, I know you. I ain't never used in the state of Florida. I relapsed. I had 2.5 years clean in Massachusetts, and I relapsed after taking a prescription, you know. Sometimes you take the prescription, and the prescription takes you. But I ain't never used in the state of Florida, you know. Where they knew me from was either in a commitment or a meeting, you know, or out in the community doing something. Hey, I know you. I saw you on TV, you know. I can tell you what goes up must come down, because I didn't feel too good, man. I was not feeling too good. I felt embarrassed. I felt ashamed. I need to tell you, the next day I went to court, and the judge looking like this. I can't even imagine. And he sent me home. And I'm walking out, and I'm saying to myself, man, I would at least gave myself anger management classes. You know what I'm saying? And sure enough, again, grace, you know. But, like, I've done some work in Narcotics Anonymous, so I knew the next right thing for me to do, right, because it happened at Perkins. Now, if you've ever been in Perkins, they got all these weapons up on the wall and shit, right? And it was like something on TV, man. It was broken glass everywhere, tables flipped over. There was people running out the door, out the window. It was on the news, and... you know, and the way I was dealing with things was with anger and rage, you know, but I didn't use. I remember going there, and I remember buying. I couldn't catch up to the people that were there that morning. So what I did is I went there, and I bought everybody breakfast. Everybody that was in the building, I bought them breakfast, you know. The manager, like, I thought he was going to bug out when I walked in, you know, because it's like, you know, I just got tased, you know, and... he welcomed me. I've always been welcomed there, you know. I don't know, you know, if it wasn't for being clean, and if it wasn't for, you know, some steps that I've done in my life, I wouldn't have done any of that. I wouldn't have done any of that. I know I wouldn't. You know, and you know, like, there's been a lot of stuff, you know, and I want to say I learned how to weather the storm through other addicts that were weathering, addicts that were weathering the storm, you know, before me, you know, my predecessors, you know. I remember seeing addicts before me, like, dealing with illnesses and disease, you know. I remember them, like, taking care of their sick kids. I remember, like, them taking care of, like, their health, you know, with the AIDS virus and the hepatitis C. And so I want to say that's how I really learned how to weather the storm, you know, because I remembered certain people stood clean through certain things, you know, but I didn't think I could ever be that guy, you know what I'm saying? I just, you know, and I know I never was, because I was always using it, and then all of a sudden I became this guy, like, I don't know, like, I've sold out to this way of life, you know? The last time I spoke at this convention, like I said, I was struggling with acting and behaving like I was clean. I could stay here. I could state here today that I no longer struggle with acting and behaving like I'm clean. I fall short, but nothing like I was back then. Nothing like I was back then. And I know it's because I keep my nose in the literature. I know it's because I still go to meetings. You know, even during the pandemic, right? I had a service position. You know, behind the scenes, whatever. I had a service position. You know, I sponsored guys. You know. I don't know, like my mom, right? Check it out. My mom, they found her bouncing her face off the concrete floor, right? And I don't know if I want to stand or sit, but, you know, they found her and she had broken her femur bone, which is the biggest femur bone there is, right? And she was in so much pain and she was under so much medication that they couldn't give her any narcotics. You know, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. That's what they told me. They said that she was in so much pain that she was hitting her head off the concrete floor, you know, and then she ended up dying from a heart attack. I'm the baby boy, right? I'm the one I had to pay for all the services. You know, my older brother didn't drop a dime in the basket. You know, if it wasn't for Narcotics Anonymous, I know, like, it wouldn't have been that way. I know it wouldn't have been that way. You know, one of my kids, he was able to donate his organs, and I cried for like 13 months straight, right? I didn't even know it was humanly possible to cry. I went to bed crying, I woke up crying. I remember washing my son. I don't know if anybody can even identify or even imagine that kind of storm or that kind of tragedy, but I remember like washing my son, you know, preparing him, you know what I mean, brushing his hair, taking a clip of his hair, you know, taking his fingerprints, you know, and I kept remembering, man, I didn't get an opportunity to do that with my other son, and the reason why I didn't get to do that with my other son is because he died right away, and they went, and then my other kid went to St. Pete, you know, and he lived for 3 days and he donated his organs. I wanted to smoke, man. I haven't smoked in like 19 years. You know, I quit smoking. And that was the one thing I thought for sure I was going to... And who could blame me? Like, even if I use, who could blame me? You know what I mean? But I wanted to smoke, and I didn't, you know? I had addicts coming up to me telling me, you know how mad mothers against drunk drivers started, right? And they would nudge me to maybe do something for the community, you know? And that's how the whole water safety, you know, drowning prevention thing came into effect. My baby boy, I was talking to somebody else today and they said something about having the hepatitis C, and chances are everybody in here has been affected by hepatitis C in one way, shape, or another. You know, at one point I had A, B, C, D, E. I think I had like the royal straight flush, you know what I'm saying? For real. And I was on a liver transplant list, stage 4, level 4 cirrhosis of the liver. And I remember arguing with the doctors because I wanted my baby boy's liver, and they told me I couldn't have it, you know. They told me that his liver was too small. I said, I don't understand, it reproduces itself and all this, and I'm trying to explain to them why I should have it. And they said, listen, it doesn't work that way, you know. But anyways, they found this girl who was on dialysis for 5 years. I don't know why, right? But I can't get away from talking about that, you know? And part of me struggles. You know, my spirit says, you know, some people really don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that. They can't go there. They don't want to phantomize. You know, they just don't want to go there. And I know that's a destructive force. I know it is. I know it's the enemy. I know it's the disease of addiction in some way, shape, or form telling me this is not that important. I think it's a story that should be told and needs to be told. And if it doesn't get told, it's a shame, you know? That's how I really feel, you know? I don't ever want anybody to go through what I went through losing their kids, you know? I can tell you, I couldn't get his organ, right? Fast forward about six months later, you know, I got a phone call, and they told me that, you know, I needed to come in, and I remember I wanted to call the mom, you know, the twins' mom, and I couldn't. I was reaching for the phone, and I said, I'm calling my sponsor, you know. Pretty much, I was with a girl that I was madly in love with. I was madly in love with. You know, the boys died on her watch. I wanted to hurt her. There were times I wanted to hurt her. And then, again, my program kicked in. You know, I gave forgiveness where most people wouldn't give forgiveness. I had to. And really what I was doing is I was forgiving myself. I was letting myself off the hook, you know. And I knew I wasn't going to do any good sitting in jail, you know. But anyways, today my liver's pristine, right? I did treatment like five times, actually four times. And you know, that treatment's come a long way. And I know there's guys in here that are familiar with the treatment, you know, the Halvoni stuff and, you know, the $1,000 a pill and stuff. You know, the way I used to respond to things is I would use, or I would put my hands on things, or I would destroy things, and everything in my being. I wanted to blow shit up, man. I really wanted to make it equal somehow, you know. And again, like if I would have acted out on hate and rage and anger, I would have ended up hurting myself or somebody else, or I would have been in jail, you know, or using, you know. So me putting love in, I was getting love out. So the answer for me was what we talk about all the time, you know, the spiritual principles, you know, the love piece, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. You know, I had to stay honest with everybody. I had to continue to share my life depended on it, because it really did, you know. I had to continue to be open, you know, and willing to like show up when I didn't want to show up, because I started realizing that, like, sometimes when I showed up, some of the most amazing things would happen. You know, I would start feeling a little bit better. You know, I don't even know, maybe I was scared that I was going to start feeling better. You know, I don't know. Grief is so cunning, baffling, it's insidious, it takes you, it blindsides you, you know. I am so grateful for Narcotics Anonymous and the spiritual principles that I've been able to apply in my life. And I haven't been perfect at it. I haven't. But the one thing I've been perfect at is I haven't used, you know. You know, how I responded to storms. I remember getting a phone call in 1994. Just got out of treatment center, and I think I had 30 days clean, and they told me that I had, you know, I had the virus. And I remember dropping the phone. I could not go get high quick enough. That was a death sentence back then. You know, so to be sitting up here, with, you know, 25 years later is truly a miracle. You know, you know, I remember going on vacation, right? And my ex-wife, she, you know. We had a baby, and his name was Joey. We had the bedroom picked out. We had, you know, clothes. I'm getting chills right now. And you know, my oldest son, you know, was excited about having a baby brother, and we went on vacation. And I think there's only maybe one person that I told this story to in this room, and she blamed me for the miscarriage. She blamed me for the miscarriage. You know, because it was a rat race day. I was going here, I was going there, I was driving, she was car sick, she threw up, and then she went home and she had the miscarriage and she blamed me. You know how I responded to that? Is I used. I took that and I used. Driving down North Front Street, clean, man, on top of the world, man. Just out of the corner of my eye, I see her. I see the girl walking the street. I pull over, I pick her up, right? We do what we do, right? I stepped out in my marriage. Not only that, you know, I went against some spiritual principles that I was trying to imply in my life. As soon as she was done doing what she did, I felt like that same piece of shit that was sitting in the shooting gallery. And I used. You know, that's how I used to respond. You know, and it's totally different today. And I want to give those examples because that's who I was. Like, Another guy, I remember being in a meeting. I remember being in like one of the biggest meetings in the parking lot, and they're selling this and they're selling that. You know what they do, right? And I remember like this guy broke my confidentiality, because some things are like anonymous and some things are confidential, and he broke my confidentiality. And I remember going up to him and putting a beating on him. I cried after doing that. Talk about twisted, man. And I used, you know. I don't know when it changed, but something changed, you know. I no longer have to use. I know using isn't going to bring my boys back. I know using wasn't going to fix my liver. You know what I mean? They told me my liver's pristine. I remember finding that word and going home and looking it up. You know what I mean? It's a pretty cool word. You know, I am so glad. Like the love that I've gotten on this road trip. I mean, I got to hang out with Barry G, right? Like, I adore him. I tell him that all the time, man. And he's just a great guy to hang out with. You know, with Mike V, just always pouring into me, always speaking life into me. You know, like, I don't want to be with people that are tolerating me. I want to be with people that are celebrating me, right? That's the guy, man. Always, like, encouraging me and lifting me up. You know, Steve. You know, hung out with Steve. We went to Jersey. We went to Philly. We're here in Maryland. I love Steve's laugh, man. There's something about laughter that it's medicine, you know. You know, they say that, like grief digs the hole that joy fills. You know what I mean? And it's so true. It's so true. Like, you know, I got to spend time with Rob up there, and I got to meet him and his wife, his beautiful wife. I mean, there was like three of us that were bragging, you know, about our wives, you know, because I just got married in 2020. Look, I'm so glad I didn't use. I'm so glad I didn't tap out. I would have never met my wife. You know what I mean? My oldest son, right, gave me a grandboy. You know, I'm a grandpa today. If I would have used or if I would have tapped out, I would have never met my grandson, Liam. You know, I don't know, like, I love Narcotics Anonymous. I wish this room was really, really full, but it's not, and that's okay. Everybody that's here was meant to be here, and I feel much better that my turn's over and it's your turn, and I love this convention. I have passion for this convention as well, and again, I think I have passion for this convention because others had passion for this convention when I first came around and got me excited, you know. Thanks for listening, and thanks for being clean.
Thanks, Paul. Our next speaker is Pat.
Hi everyone, I'm an addict. My name's Pat. Phew. I was sitting over here listening, and you seem so serene, sitting here and talking, and so calm, and my heart feels like it's going to jump out of my chest, right? And that's the way it is for me. It's just what happens with me. I've learned not to try to change that, but to accept that that's just the way it is. And years ago, I was watching television. They were interviewing this drummer. I can't tell you who he was. He was some kind of famous drummer from like back in the 60s or something. And during the course of the interview, he said that every time he got up on stage, he got extremely nervous. And the person who was doing the interview was like shocked by this. Like, that's all the guy ever did. His whole life was like sit on stage and play drums. And he said, you get nervous every time. He said, yeah. He said, I'm glad it happens. And the guy said, well, why are you glad that it happens? And he said, because it tells me that this means something to me. And I just grabbed a hold of that and just ran with that. You know, because this really does mean something to me. I'm very grateful and honored to be asked to share my experience in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And I don't know where I'm going to go with all this tonight. How to weather the storm. I guess that First, I'll just say that I love Narcotics Anonymous. There's no two ways about it. If it wasn't for Narcotics Anonymous, I wouldn't be the person that I am today. I wouldn't have had the experiences that I've had, whether they're storms or just a couple years ago. I had one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had in my entire life. You know, so I'm from Baltimore City, a nice little neighborhood called Westport, if anybody knows where that's at. That's where I was raised. That's where I spent most of my life and my first couple years clean. I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous by a methadone counselor who loved me enough to put me in her car and take me to a meeting. And I found out when I had 20 years clean that she could have gotten fired for that. She revealed that to me after I had 20 years clean. I didn't know that, and I'm so grateful. She actually not only took me to a meeting, but when I detoxed off of methadone, my first day clean was at a speaker jam in the Bay Area, and she came to my house and picked me up and took me to that speaker jam to help me celebrate my first day clean. And I'm really grateful. I didn't think I was going to live. I didn't think I was going to make it out of addiction. I really thought that I was going to die. And I reached out for help. I really think it was just self-preservation kicked in when I reached out for help. And anyway, I got here. I grabbed a hold of this guy who, I lived in Westport. He lived in Baltimore Highlands. He had 4 home groups and 2 service commitments. And neither one of us had a car, but we got there every night. You know what I mean? He said, man, if we can just get there, we'll get a ride home, I promise. You know, I just grabbed a hold of the guy and just ran with it. I just ran with it. And I was taught, pray, go to meetings, don't use no matter what. When you get the opportunity, help somebody else. Also, get a home group, get a sponsor, work the steps, get involved. And, you know, I've just done whatever it's taken. I've been complacent at times, but I've just always stayed in meetings. I've always kept coming to meetings, and I've never stopped, and I'm still here. So I was taught, if you have thoughts about using, call somebody. Play the tape to the end. And when I played the tape to the end, I lost jobs, cars, license, relationships, got arrested, wound up in emergency rooms, and none of those things are attractive to me today. The way I live my life today, that lifestyle is just not attractive. But I also know that all that stuff is just outside unmanageability, you know, and I've lived that. I can handle that. What I don't want to go back to is the inside unmanageability. I don't want to go back to the emptiness and the loneliness and the degradation and the desperation and the 2 big ones for me, the shame and the guilt, that were ripping me apart from the inside out. That's what I don't want to go back to. I don't want to walk around feeling like a piece of shit anymore. You know, and that's where I take it. And I remember going home from that speaker jam my first night, you know, my first day clean. And it was just an incredible day for me. I got a lot of hope that day. I heard a lot of powerful speakers. I went home and I couldn't sleep. And I thought it was just because I was so pumped up from the speaker jam, you know. But as the night wore on, I realized that methadone withdrawals were starting to kick my ass. And I was living in Baltimore City in Westport. I was staying at Mom's house. And she had left early Sunday morning with my sister Kathy. And I was laying on the floor in my living room, sick as a dog, with 8 paychecks. And the disease of addiction was just screaming. All you got to do is walk outside. It's right there. Just go. It's right outside. And on any other given day, as soon as I thought shop was open, I'd have been out the door. But something had changed. And what changed was you guys have given me hope. And I just laid on the floor thinking, man, if I can just get through this, I will never have to go through it again. And then it finally came through to me, you know, this guy gave me his phone number. He said, if you ever feel like using, call me. He said, if you use, don't bother. It's too late. He said, call me before you use. And I picked up the phone and I called this guy. And he couldn't do anything about the physical pain that I was in. but he helped talk me through the thoughts of using and showed me the insanity of my life. And actually got me to a meeting. As sick as I was, I went to a meeting. And I just have never stopped. And, you know, people ask me sometimes today, you still go to those meetings? Yes, I still go to those meetings. Why would you do that? Because my life has never been better. Why would I stop? And it's not that I have a lot of money and I have cars and boats and all this stuff. My life is rich here. My life is rich with the relationships that I have with friends and family, even co-workers. I have co-workers that come to my anniversary. And I'm just filled, you know. So, I remember, you know, she's 3 months clean, decided that it was okay to get into a relationship. And it didn't last long. But prior to it not lasting long, I was sitting in a meeting on a Friday night at Christian Street, 10 o'clock, we should have been dead group. And this guy who I always looked at as this big, like, tough guy, he started sharing in a meeting, and he stood up, and he was talking about people coming into the meeting, joining the home group. He starts sponsoring these guys, and they get into a relationship, and they're gone. And he was in tears. And when the relationship ended, I had that vision of him doing that and said, man, I don't want that to be me. And I persevered. I just like went full force running, but I ran the meetings. I had a full-time job working 10 hours a day, and I was going to 17 meetings a week. Right? And finally, you know, after a few weeks of that, I called somebody. It was actually the methadone counselor that I had. I said, look, I said, you know, this is what happened. I think I'm running. She said, well, if you're running, it's okay because you're running the meetings and you've stayed clean. She said, you ever seen Forrest Gump? And she rattled off the numbers. I can't tell you what they were, but she said, well, he ran for, you know, 3 years, 2 weeks, and whatever days it was to get through what he had to go through. And if that's what you had to do to get through it and stay clean, that's what you did. You know, how do I weather the storm? Sometimes I have to take it in from other people's experience. Sometimes shame and guilt can play a part in that. I don't want to use because I don't want to disappoint somebody. That played a part for me early on. And so then I got a sponsor and started working steps, and recovery began. And 6 years clean, my mom passed away. At 2 years clean, I met a woman, moved in together, we got married. 6 years clean, mom passed away. In 2005, the marriage dissolved. Guy that I was sponsoring, he called me up. He said, Pat, he said, why don't you come down here? Stay with me for a while, you know, till you get back on your feet. So I moved out of Annapolis and into where I'm at now, actually. And moved in with Steve, and we became closer. I was sponsoring Steve, and we got closer. We became more friends and meeting buddies, and that was in May of 2005. In August, he was killed in a motorcycle accident on his way to his 8th year anniversary. And it was some tough times. And there was a guy who I knew who he was. I didn't know him. We weren't friends. But he started calling me every morning, like 7 o'clock in the morning. What are you doing, Pat? I'm getting up and I'm going to work. That's right. That's what you do. You get up and you go to work. You get up and you show up. And every morning for like a month, he just called me every day just to tell me that. You know? That's what people do in here. How do I weather the storm? Jeez. How do you do that? You know? We're each other's eyes and ears. We help take care of each other. You know? So when I hear people talking bad about somebody else or talking about somebody else, you know, if they're doing that, maybe instead of like talking about them, maybe we should pray for them. Because they're probably in trouble if they're doing something that you think is wrong. You know, that's what I've learned around here. It's coming up on 6 years ago. I was with a woman for almost 10 years. We were together. And August will be 6 years that she passed away unexpectedly. And it was really difficult for me. I really had a hard time with it. I just really did. It's the truth of the matter. And gosh, when I walked into the funeral home and saw her in the casket, I almost fell to my knees. My knees buckled. I mean, it was really hard. And I wasn't even able to share openly about it in a meeting. This happened in August until like November. I just couldn't even talk about it without breaking down. I mean, my sponsor, people in my network, they got it full force. I would go to work and, you know, somebody at work would say, how you doing with that? You know, I'd raise my hands, shake my head, you know, that was the best I could give. That's where I was at. 9 months later, I'm sitting in front of a doctor who told me I had an incurable form of cancer. And at that particular moment, it would have been real easy for me to say, fuck it. Candy's gone. What is there? You know, I'm in this house by myself. The hardest thing for me to do every day was go to the house, to come home from work. It was the toughest thing for me to do. But I just kept moving. And even though that came to me when the doctor told me that, there's another part of me that said no. This part of me, my spirit, said no. And I looked at the doctor and I did what you guys taught me to do. You guys taught me in the first step, if I want to stay clean, I'll do whatever it takes. And I looked at the doctor, I said, tell me what to do. Just tell me what to do and I'll do it. And I've tried to have, as this has gone by for me, I've tried to get like a better understanding of what happened with me during all this time. Year before COVID hit, I was having dinner with my sister Kathy, and we were talking, just talking, and I said, man, it's just like, I can't believe that I just like went through all this stuff. And she was just sitting there shaking her head. And I said, why are you shaking your head? She said, Patrick, she said, it's not that you just went through all this stuff. She said, it's how you went through it. And I didn't even think about what she was saying at the moment. It just kind of, like, and my best recollection is this. I told the doctor, I'll do whatever it takes, first of all. And so the first year from, like, I don't know, the end of April or May till October, I just went every 3 weeks, rounds and rounds and rounds, four or five different kinds of chemo I went through. And that put me in what they call remission, but they tell me what I have comes back. They said it's going to come back. They don't know when or, you know, but that's what they told me. They told me that if I want to stay around for a little while, my best option would be to go through stem cell transplant. And what that involved was, I already had a metaport in this side of my chest. They put a dual line catheter in the other side of my chest. And I had to go home at night and give myself Neupogen injections in my stomach to increase my white blood cell count. And then they hooked me up to this machine, one line into the machine, the other line back. And this machine harvested stem cells from my bloodstream. And what it didn't harvest went back into my system. And not long after, they cryogenically froze them and incubated those stem cells. And then not long after that, they put me in the hospital, and I got chemo twice a day for 6 days, and their intent was to completely wipe out my immune system. And they accomplished that. I mean, I was sick as a dog, too. It was tough. And then after that, they threw an IV through this catheter, put the stem cells back into my bloodstream. And it takes about 5-6 days for them to filter down through your organs, get into your bone marrow, and start producing white blood cells again. And the thing about that is, they can't give you white blood cells. You can give red blood cells, and I got platelets plenty of times while I was on chemo, but they can't give you white blood cells. You got to produce them. So I'm sitting in the hospital for 5 days with no immune system, and then the disease starts coming through. You know, what if this doesn't work? You're dead. Did you make the right decision? Because if you didn't, you're dead. You know, you're not leaving here. And I just, like, did what I was taught, did what people taught me. I'm just going to pray. You know? And what I believe for me, since having this experience, is that fear and faith can live in the same house. Yeah, I was scared, but I had faith that no matter what, God's got me. And I became okay with that. And one day I started producing white blood cells. And a few days later, as they started to climb, the doctor came in and she had a conversation with me. She sat down next to me on the bed and looked at me and she said, "Patrick," I said, "Yeah." She said, "From a medical standpoint, you've just climbed Mount Everest." And when I went in there, people that were helping me out, like the nurses and stuff, because I'm in there going, you know, even when I still early on when I was getting chemo, you know, I can't wait to get back to work. I just want to get back to work. And they said, "Oh, maybe in 6 months you'll be working part-time." I'm like, "This is not going to work." But, you know, 7 weeks, I was back to work full-time, you know. And I go through this story to talk about this, to let you know that what happened in the beginning of this for me was that, I heard you say it, recovery kicked in. Recovery kicked in for me. What I was taught just came through without me even knowing it, because it's become a way of life for me. It just all just kicked in. And I learned from here, like, I only have to do this just for today. If I want to stay clean, I just got to stay clean today. If I stay clean today, the years will take care of themselves. I just got to stay clean today. So I just kept telling myself, I only have to do this today. I don't have to worry about tomorrow or what the chemo is going to do for me, at, you know, 6 months from now or whatever the case may be. I just have to do it today. I had to get a different perspective on my life. Instead of getting up and thinking, "Geez, man, I didn't get on the internet. I didn't look up what I have, because I know me. I know I would have got caught up in fear. And I just would have been locked into that place. So I just did whatever I had to do every day full force. I just got up in the morning. Thank you, God. Go down to the hospital. Thank the people that I'm there with. Because I'm going down there to visit these people who are trying to save my life. I'm not going to give them an attitude. I'm not going to give them a sad story. I'm going to go down there with a smile on my face and say, thank you for helping me. Thank you." You know? Because that's the way I felt. My goal with each day as I went down there was to be as positive as I possibly could. Not because that's what I needed to do, because that's who I am. You know? That's who I want to be. You guys told me I can be whoever I want to be. What kind of man do you want to be? That's what I kept asking myself. What kind of man do you want to be? This is the kind of man I want to be. I want to go down there. You know, I want to show up for work every day because I'm grateful to be there. And I'm going to work my ass off because these people give me the opportunity to do something and I get paid for it. You know? So here it is, you know, 5 years later. And I got chemo actually 3 more years after the stem cell, once every other month, because studies show that that helps keep me in remission. And I just did what you guys taught me to do. I just showed up. And every day now, I wake up and I'm just like, thank you, God, I'm still here. I'm still alive. My primary care doctor told me a year and a half ago that he's surprised that I am alive. You know? So I'm just so glad every day I wake up. But that's not to say that I'm not human, that I still don't get caught up in fear, that I still don't get angry, that I still don't get frustrated at work, and I still get, like, really tensed up sometimes at work. I work at an extremely busy place. I care about the place. I want us to do better, even though we're doing really good. I want us to do better, but I'm not the boss, right? And I see things happening. Sometimes I tried saying something. I tried it all. And none of it works because I'm not in charge. I'm just there to do a job. And I show up and I do my best. And I had a colonoscopy a couple, well, it's been over a month now. And a couple days later, I was having some symptoms that were, like, bothering me. And I left work because I wasn't feeling well. And I was trying to get a hold of the people where I got the procedure done at, just, you know, get some answers about, you know, am I in trouble here? Nobody could get on the phone to tell me anything. All they could tell me was, we can't give you any medical advice. 3 different times I got a hold of somebody, and that's all they could tell me. And I wasn't feeling right, so I went to the emergency room. And I went to the emergency room. You sign in at one place, then you go sign in again, and then they take you back to take your vitals. And I'm sitting in the room where they're taking the vitals for the symptoms I was having, and they hooked me up to take my blood pressure, and the woman says, he's AFib. And they, like, took me right back to the emergency room. They were shooting me up with some kind of stuff because my heart rate was, like, out of control. And they shot me up a couple times, then they hooked me up to an IV, and then things started to settle down a little bit. And apparently I have AFib, and I didn't know it. And it could have been happening for years. But the way I see this picture that just played out is, I wasn't supposed to get a hold of anybody down at the place where I had the procedure done. I was supposed to be in the emergency room. That was the plan. It wasn't for me to get an answer for that. I was supposed to be in an emergency room so they could see that I have AFib and my heart rate was out of control and I needed some medication for it. So that's what I did. And now I'm on medication. I'm on heart medication. And I had an echocardiogram done on Monday. It was like, of all the stuff I've been through, that was like the most pleasurable procedure I've ever had in my life, right? Because, you know, I'm in there and the text says, you know, you can take off your shirt, lay on here, face the wall, and she's got this little thing that she puts gel on and rubs on your chest, but she's got one hand on the computer and she's leaned over on me with her arm around me, just rubbing my chest and I'm just laying there. You know, you gotta make the best of it, right? It felt good, you know. Cayman's been gone for 6 years. I haven't really been with anybody. So here I am. So, how do I weather the storm? Gosh, I rely on what recovery has taught me. I rely on the principles of recovery. I stay involved in Narcotics Anonymous. Pray, go to meetings, don't use no matter what. When you get the opportunity, help somebody else. I do my best to do that whenever I get the opportunity. But I also have a home group. I have a position at a home group. I've been involved in service. That part of service outside of the home group, I haven't been able to do in a while because my work schedule has just been keeping me from having a commitment like that. But I've always tried my best to stay involved. And I heard somebody talking earlier about doing a 1-2-3 shuffle. And there's a line in It Works How and Why in the third step about if we pause to take a look at our life at this stage of our recovery, we will see that we have experienced dramatic personal growth. It says that in It Works How and Why. When I first read that, I thought, that's a pretty bold statement for us to make, you know, and that was in step 3. But it also follows with, this is only a glimpse of what we can accomplish by working the rest of the steps. And when I got to 6 and 7, I don't know why this came to me, but whatever comes, I'm, you know, putting it out there. My prayer started changing in step 7 because it says we humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. And I stopped saying, God, you know I need this. You know this is what I want. This needs to happen. I stopped doing that and started humbly asking, God, will you help me? Because in step 6, I really started seeing how much of me I wasn't turning over. How much of me was still locked in fear. I was an introvert when I came in here. I couldn't get up in front of a class in school and do a book report, let alone get up in front of people and speak and talk about me and be honest about me. You know? And that's when recovery really started kicking in for me, when those kind of changes started happening. When those kind of... The two big things for me are, one is I've lost the desire to use, and number two is, on most nights when I lay down, I feel pretty good about who I am and the way my life is. And I'm in the midst of this little bit of a storm right now, with still up in the air about what's really going on with my heart, because I haven't talked to the cardiologist yet. I had the test done on Monday, and they haven't contacted me yet to tell me what's going on. Also, a few months back, a couple months ago, I've been renting this house for going on 16 years now, and now they're selling the house. And man, that's a kind of turn my world upside down. I don't know if I can afford to buy it. I'm putting some things into place to see if I can, and if not, I'll have to move. You know, but when that news first hit me, I was, you know, it was tough on me. You know, I'm human, you know. I've been there for a long time. I love it there. I absolutely love where I live at. There's no, you know, no doubt about it. But, you know, sometimes things change, and sometimes it's for the better. When they downsized, I had no idea that I was going to wind up where I am now. They downsized, they said, I walked in on a Wednesday and said, "We're sorry to tell you this, but Friday's your last day." And I was heartbroken. I was there for 8 years, you know. And I interviewed with three places that offered me, a couple of them offered me management positions. And the guy that was the manager where I'm at now at the time, he called me up and he said, "I heard you look for a job." I said, "I am." He said, "I got this position for you. This is how much I'll pay you. When can you start?" Right? That was on my phone. That was my interview, right? And the disease of addiction came right in. I said, "You're not going to make it there. This place is considered the best at what they do." And the disease just said, "You're not going to make it there." How do I weather that? I recognize that. I write about addiction in the first step. I haven't done just one first step, but I write about addiction and the disease of addiction and how it affects me. It affects me in my self-esteem. "You're not going to make it there." I recognized it. I said, "I'll be there Monday." Right? I put that to rest right away. You know, if I have a thought about using, I need to put it to rest right away. Stay clean. And practice... I was taught, live the steps and practice the principles. And you guys are my network. You guys are my family. You guys are who I need to open up to and talk to about these things, because you're the ones that best understand me. One addict helping another. That's how I weather the storms. Through step work. Through opening up. Being honest about me. Relying on God. Relying on my network. You know, going to meetings. Sharing about that stuff. You know? That's how I weather the storm. And, man, I've been going to meetings a long time. I've been clean for quite a while. And there's some things that just blow me away. And when I think about the 12th step, it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. As a result of working steps, we have a spiritual awakening. When I looked up spiritual, it said, of or pertaining to the soul. And when I looked up awakening, it said reviving. And what you guys have helped me do is revive my soul. What that means to me is that's that part of me that tells me the truth. That's that part of me that I need to listen to. When I was using, I was working at this place, and I was stealing, you know. I'm not going to get into how it all happened, but there was a part of me when it was going on that was saying, "You're not supposed to be doing this." But addiction is so powerful, it just overrides that. And I just did it. And I can still do that today. Don't get me wrong, I can still do that today. But this is the part, that part of me that tells me the truth is what I need to pay more attention to. And working through steps and continuing to do that helps clear the crap out of the way so that I have a clear view of that. So that I can hear that more loudly. And that really started coming through for me in working step 11. And it just works. It all just works. And So I go to meetings, and I'll see somebody new come in, and they're beat up. You know, if they're anything like me, they're desperate. I was dying, you know, possibly dying. Don't know what they're doing there, or even if they should be there, or if they want to be there or not. They just know they're there, their heads down, and they sit in meetings, and they keep coming back, and then their head starts coming up. Because we welcome them in, we give them a hug and say, keep coming back. And then this light comes on, they start making friends. They start getting involved. Get a home group, get a sponsor, they start working steps. Next thing you know, they got a year clean. Next thing you know, they're sponsoring people. Why is that? Because it's attractive. People see it. And it's attractive to people. And I like to talk about this because when I was working the front counter where I work at, we have a lot of people all the time in there, but I got free and this guy Teddy was next. I said, Teddy, can I help you? He said, no. He said, I'm waiting for Steve. I said, okay, that's fine. And I just moved on. You know, I learned how to not take stuff personally, you know what I mean? And then after he finished, he came down to me and he said, look, Pat, he said, nothing wrong with you or anything. I've been dealing with Steve for 20 years. I just want to talk to Steve. I said, that's fine, Teddy. I didn't take it personal, or could. He said, no. He said, I just didn't want to deal with your lily white ass. I just said, oh, Teddy, I prefer pasty face. And him and I have become friends, and he invited me on a fishing trip with him a couple years ago. But, you know, a while after all that happened, I was free at my station, and he was in there. And he come walking down to me. And he come up and he leaned over the counter. He said, I want to ask you a question. I said, what's that, Daddy? He said, what position do you hold in your church? And I was like stunned. I don't go to church. That may happen for me yet. I don't know. So I'm like, Teddy, I don't go to church. Why do you say that? He said, because you carry yourself different than other people do. And I don't say that to like say, look at me. I say that to say, that's what recovery has done for me. You know, that's what people see. When that newcomer is asking a guy to be a sponsor, because they see something in him. They see his spirit. You know what I mean? It's attractive. And Teddy saw that in me. He didn't know what he was looking at, but that's what he saw. That's what I believe he saw. And it just blows me away that that's what we do for each other in here. We help each other out, and we become better people. If we work the steps, we learn how to live the steps and practice principles and become better people. And I'm just part of this thing that is so much bigger than me. That we do that for each other. It's amazing. Where we come from, like the dregs of society, we come in here and we do this and we help each other not only stay clean, but live just a fabulous life. And I'll just tell you this quick little thing. I don't know how long. My time frame is just zapped out. It's probably been 10, 12 years ago. I don't know when it was. But I had something going on that later was described as a thrombosed hemorrhoid. I knew I had something going on, and I didn't go get it checked out right away. And one morning I got up, I was getting ready for work, I went to the bathroom, there was all this blood, and I was like, holy shit, I got cancer, I'm going to die. You know, it's just the way this brain works. And I wiped myself again, it was like this dark blood clot blood, and I'm like, damn, I'm in trouble. So I go in and I get Cammy up. I said, I need to go to the doctor. She said, what's going on? So I tell her what's going on. She says, well, let me see. Who does that, right? But that's the relationship that we have. We love each other, right? And she takes a look and she says, get in the car. And she drove me to the emergency room. And you know you're in there for a while unless, you know, you have a heart attack or something. And finally they took me in the back and I'm back there. And finally a doctor comes in. It was a woman, of course. And she asked me what's going on. I tell her. And she says, well, get on your side. And she's looking at me and wiping me off. And then she looks over at Cammy and says, have you seen this? And Cammy said, yeah, why? She said, because I want you to look at it again. tell me if you think it's bigger or smaller or what's going on. And the doctor looked down at me and she said, I hate to bring her into this. She said, I know it's embarrassing. I just looked at her and said, well, I'm here to save my ass, not my face. And that doctor cracked up. She was no good. And but that's what recovery has done for me. It's helped me to be me. You know, I never was okay with just being me. But that's who I've become today. I try to find joy in life and having somebody else smile. It means a lot to me. That's why I try to treat people like you guys teach me to treat people, with compassion and empathy. And I'm just so glad to be here and be a part of this. It just blows me away. Thank you guys for letting me share.
Thank everybody for showing up. Thank you, Paul and Pat, for sharing. Thank you for the opportunity for me to be here. I'd like to close with a moment of silence, followed by a serenity prayer.